World Affairs Report, 30 minutes of conversation designed to make you better aware of the world around you. The World Affairs Report is brought to you by the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh in cooperation with KQV News Radio. The World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that has been bringing the world to Pittsburgh for over 80 years. To learn more about the council and upcoming events, please visit worldpittsburgh.org. And now, the World Affairs Report.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Angelica Ocampo. The outbreak of the Second Sudanese Civil War in 1983 began as a conflict that would permanently alter the lives of thousands. The civil war would ultimately lead to 2 million deaths, million displaced, and 20,000 uprooted young boys. These young boys, most of whom were 6 or 7 years old, were forced to flee to Ethiopia to escape death or induction into the Sudan People's Liberation Army. In the next few years, these children fled Sudan in search of safety, and this turned out to be a treacherous 1,000-mile journey to Ethiopia. About half of these boys lost their lives to hunger, dehydration, and exhaustion. Wandering in and out of war zones, these boys spent the next 4 years in dire conditions. In 1991, war in Ethiopia sent the young refugees fleeing once again, and about 1 year later, they began to come into northern Kenya. About 10,000 boys ended up reaching Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. A guest today is Paul Dancour, one of the survivors of this event that became known as the Lost Boys of Sudan, and he's also the author of Out of the Impossible, The Hope of the Lost Boy. Paul, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
And what a story you have to tell.
My personal life have come a long way as an individual who was many of the Southern Sudanese lost boy who were separated from their families in 1987. So I'm members of them. Then I had 14 of us as cousin. I'm one of the three people who is alive among my cousin. So I have came through a lot of pain, very intense emotionally, mentally, you name it. I have went through a lot. And so being in this country have helped me to survive. Had it not been for this country, I wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. I would have been dead already.
How old were you when this journey started for you?
I was only five.
5 years old.
I was only 5 years old. Huh. And majority of my cousins, 13 of them, and myself included, which is we were 14. The older, I think, was 10. And we help each other. Well, we continue to die. Many of them die just as we walk. Some of them were, one girl was swallowed by the snake. That was my first experience to see a death among my family members. It's cousin to call it that way. And so it was a very hectic life that I hit so much. But I have rebounds from it. But still, a lot still haunt me. So come
there,
back.
Were there any adults in your life as you were growing up? Was there anybody in your life that said, it's better for you to leave now? Or was this a decision that you had to make as a little boy with your cousins?
I was the sole decision maker. With some of my relatives make decision on my own because there were no adult at all. And so I made a decision to join the Sudanese People Liberation Army because it was the only hope to see my family. And a lot of the time, the SPLA always manipulating us, saying you don't have option, but your only option is to join the army, and this is the only way for you to see your family. And so, with that in mind, it was easy for many of us to join the army.
How old were you when you joined?
I was 8.
Eight.
Yeah.
I guess also this was a way of getting yourself some kind of food and shelter?
Exactly. As we didn't have food. Food was really one of the biggest issues. But if you have a gun, you can hunt. But before we were given guns, we depend solely on root and leaves of land. Even as of today, I hate to eat salad. I don't eat salad because it just remind me. I hate it so much because of that. I have added from my way from Sudan to Ethiopia. That's all you eat, nothing else.
Roots and leaves.
A root and leaf. And so with that, when I see people eating salad here to be skinny, I just don't look at it that way. So today I don't eat it.
So you get to Kenya, you get to the Kakuma camp. You escaped camps repeatedly, is that correct?
5 times.
Why? What was it that you wanted to leave? You didn't feel safe?
Yeah, it was safe, but it made me, I feel lonely there. I feel lonely, plus I was only interested in finding my family. And I kept hearing some of them are alive. And my only way to find them is to stay in the army, to fight our way through until we reach to where our village was. And so I escaped 5 times. I have been taken to many of East African countries. And then I always made it back, just because my hope, I didn't feel as if, you know, I can live the life that I was living as a person. So I wanted to make sure that I see, or, you know, see someone within my family, at least. And it just encouraged me to escape a lot of the time. And
escape and rejoin the army.
Rejoin the army, yeah.
And did you ever make it back to the village with the army?
Never.
Never.
Never. I never reached the village. We fight the fight war. It was just for me to fight war, to die there, because many of my friends have died. Life was so meaningless. There was no meaning of living life. You live in pain every single day. So I say it was at least having a member of your family or seeing someone within your family alive was just a great thing. And so we fight, just fight to see our families. Very, very important. And without that, many of the kids have tried, and some of them didn't make it. Many of them, many of the lost boy. But we tried. Some of them have seen their families, and that encouraged us. So I joined purposely just to make sure that I see any member of my family alive, but I never seen them up to today.
Until today you have never
seen
your family
again.
Do you have news about them? Do you know if they're alive?
Yes, I do. Back in 2005, when the peace was signed, that was when my younger brother. Well, first, I didn't even know I have a brother. He was born after I was separated from the family. I had one of my friends who happened to come across him, and he talked to him, and he said he knew who I am. And so he brought him to Uganda. It took him days to come to Uganda, because you have to walk from Sudan, from what used to be a unified Sudan then, to Uganda. So he called me here in America, and he introduced himself to me. I couldn't believe it, because I have no recollection of having a brother at all. And so a younger brother, I know my older brother, and he introduced himself. We met on the same name, similar name, middle and last name. And so in my mind, I said, you know, maybe my family is alive. I couldn't take it. I was crying all night. It was very intense, because in my, you know, I've said finally this is the first time in my whole time after I was separated from the family, to really get in touch with someone in my family. And I thought one of my friends was playing joke on me, and it just he's a good friend of mine. He committed, that kid committed suicide because his whole family.
Your friend?
Yeah, that friend. He committed suicide because the whole family, he had always hoped that the family was alive, but nobody was alive in his family. So he committed suicide. But yes, my family, that's how I got in touch with my family.
And your brother is now in Uganda?
Yeah, he's now in South Sudan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you just said at the beginning of the program that this country changed your life. Tell us a bit more how your life changed around, and what was the process between, you know, from the moment you were just escaping camps to go back to your village to then deciding maybe yourself or somebody making a decision for you to come to the U.S.?
Well, the program that was meant for Lost Boy, because we had went through a lot of pain, and the American government have seen to how much pain we have went through, and so they decided it was time for them to at least help us, because there was many of us were just in the camp. Some like myself always escaped because didn't wanted to stay in the camp. And so the program itself was meant as part of an intervention to help us at least live a life that we have never lived. And so it's remarkable. I remember one of my friend who he's actually in Arizona. He came, he escaped, he didn't want to come to America. But now he's doing very, very well.
Did you want to come?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
No.
You didn't?
No. And I wanted to find my family. That was my priority. But when I came here, I realized that there was so much that you can do in this country. I came here with a second grade. I used to hate school so much because when we were taken into what they call internal displaced camp, the Sudanese will come and bomb our school under the tree and kill so many children. So I hate school as a whole because it exposes me to a lot of stuff, death. And so I hate school. Even coming to this country, it was not my priority. It was not my priority, but I say if things change over there, then I can pursue it. So I was able to, pick it up. I went to high school here and went to college here. I have now a bachelor degree, two master's degree, and so being in this country, I've changed who I am as an individual, and I'm alive.
It's amazing how much you've overcome and how much you've accomplished.
Yeah.
And you came in 2001?
2001, yeah.
So in 16 years, you've accomplished so much.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
Especially you've overcome such tragedy and such terrible circumstances. What was it? Was it inside you that you had this resilience? Was there somebody in your life? Were you provided with some support that helped you rise from where you were coming from?
We have individuals that are really very instrumental, but we have that in mind that, you know, we have lived through pain. There is nothing left that we haven't seen, whether we're still alive as we are now, or and living in this country, we have a lot of choice to make. And there were people who were willing to help us. Have a woman whom I dedicated my book to, was very, very instrumental. She helped us, and also Foster mom as well help us. So there were few individuals but we have a mindset saying that this country, you know, as we have seen it, you can make it if you work very hard. Like now, I work two jobs. I work at night and leave from that job to another job. If you can work, you can make it in this country.
You're working and also you're doing your master's at Duquesne University?
Yeah, I did all the master's I was doing my master's at Duquesne while I worked as a full-time there. But after graduating, I got another job. So I worked two jobs, one at night at Duquesne and the other one during the day. So around this time, I'm usually at work.
You're talking to Paul Keng Dur. He's the author of Out of the Impossible, The Hope of the Lost Boy, and he's one of the Lost Boys of Sudan, as you were known. How many of those boys, now men, are still alive and have a life, or at least are alive, or are here in the U.S. or elsewhere in the world? Do you know?
There are almost 4,000 of us. We're not, the number have decreased so far. So many of them went back. Some of them, many of them are still here. And some of them are drugs, were also involved in drugs. Some of them are not alive. It just could be anything here and back in southern Sudan. So, many of us are doing just fine. Living life, those of us who have families have a hope for returning back.
You still are hopeful for a return?
All these years I have always wanted to go back, but have no capability financially. Even after I work now full-time and part-time, but my intention was to go back in 2016. That was my intention, but my father got sick, so he was taken to both Kenya, Uganda, and many of the East African countries for treatment, and they couldn't find what was wrong with him. And so I've been the one paying for him to be transported to treatment. So he has interfered with me going back, with my plan of going back to see everybody. But he passed away, so I'm planning now to go see the whole family, but it will take time.
And are you planning maybe on staying there? Where do you see yourself in 10 years from now?
I hate war with passion. Our people went back to war, and I don't want to be part of the war. It's not in my intention, because I've seen a lot. Sitting here, I have a lot of scars of the Civil War, emotionally, mentally, you name it. So my intention is just not to be part of the war again, as it is going on now. So I just wanted to see the family and come back. Mm-hmm. And if the war stop, I have other things that I would like to do. I'm much into education, a lot at home, and that is what I would like to pursue at home.
And you said before that you're interested in providing educational opportunities for girls.
For girls, yes, that is correct. Our girls are married early, at the age of sometime 12, 13, or marriage. And so I would like to make change, to bring change, starting within my village first. Even now I have staffy while I'm here. So young girls are not married anymore in my own village within the extended families. I've put an end to that, just to give them a chance in life, so they can, if there are school, they can go to school. And I would like to expand that to be a whole country agenda to achieve that equal distribution of education and giving a child, a young girl, a chance to be a person she desires to be. Whether, at least finishing high school would be a good, or even elementary school would be a good thing, but they are not given a chance. And so it is my intention to ensure they get a chance, at least. Mm-hmm. I have my cousin, all of my cousin die among the 14 were the world girl. None of them didn't make it, none of the girls. Some of them were raped, so they die in the process. So I've seen enough of the pain many of the girls went through. Too much. It's just, and so, it's a better way to help. A better way to for them to know they are right and can say no to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be through education and in early marriage. It's just not helpful.
Mm-hmm.
It exposes them to many issues. So, it is my intention to do just that. But I don't have the means to do it. But if God will, hopefully something will happen.
Is there any organization that supports you and the men who were boys from Sudan? Is there any active organization where people who are hearing your very moving testimony and may think of helping, is there a way that they can do that, a place that they can go?
There are organizations that help us here in this country. But I don't think they have that capability to do more than helping refugees here, like for instance, a Catholic charity here.
Mm-hmm.
It's doing very well helping refugees, but I don't think they have that much to do more help, you know. So they are overwhelmed helping others here, and so which of course I appreciate them. And also in Philadelphia with Lutheran Children's Services, which help us, you know, so those organizations are not really, you know, they don't have that capability than just being helpful to many of the families here. So yeah, you just struggle on your own until you find something.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not easy. I don't have a strong network, but I'm trying my best every single day. I work, I will go to work and still do a lot of things to make sure I do some of the things that I would like to achieve.
Is there a Sudanese community here? Have you found people from Sudan that are living in Pittsburgh?
Yes, there are. We have a group, yes, indeed, a group of the Lord's were still here. Many of them have moved out to in search of job, because it's not easy to to find job sometimes. Even now, the areas where I'm working are not in my field of studies. I'm just working. Even I can work in McDonald's, if anything. So,
what is your field of study? What did you? What is your master's?
One is in social and comparative analysis. It's a policy in education. And the other one is what they call leadership advancement at Duquesne University. And the other one was from the University of Pittsburgh.
Wow.
But
again, it's amazing how much you've accomplished.
Thank you so much.
Really. It's humbling,
yeah.
And I think it's for the benefit of Pittsburgh to have you here and share your story, and I appreciate your sharing such a painful story with us. As a refugee in general, in your experience as a refugee, what are the key things that can help a refugee overcome the adversities of being a refugee and what, you know, might be in their past? What kind of services do you think are needed for refugees to fully integrate to the community?
The Anna and I touched that a little bit earlier. The rehabilitation of the person, the child growing up through a very dramatic life. I have always felt that this country have helped me, but there could have been something done more, such as the rehabilitation, because even though I have rebounds, at least from some of the things that happened to me, I still feel there should have been at least a way to rehabilitate us, help us at least in deal with our mental state of mind. And many more, but those things we have yet to see them. But I'm still very grateful. I made it. I'm alive in this country, which is one of the greater things that this country have given me. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. But they can do better than they just, you know, bring a person and just leave them there.
And what are your hopes for Sudan in the future?
Peace, like a serious peace.
Do you think that's feasible?
If the American people especially the government, involved, it will definitely work. But the American government is, I think, I'm not sure with the new government in place, it is not easy as of now, but once the government enter, it would be a good thing, and maybe it will be achieved for sure.
Just remind me how big is the population in Sudan?
In South Sudan, we have a population of, I think, about 12,000, I believe. I can't remember exactly.
Okay. Okay. But the war has been going on for too long.
Yeah. It's just very sickening. If you have seen seen the some of the stuff that I have seen from a child, I wouldn't create a war. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't create a war. I wouldn't be part of a war unless if it is it's hurting innocent people. Mm-hmm. But I have no better description of it. The way I felt, I hate it so much. I hate it so much, a lot, because I'm leaving. I have been shot before. I have been. It's just something that I really don't want to deal with. And so, if there is a way to restrain from war, I would say just don't start a war. You know, mm-hmm. Politically, it's always a way to achieve. Political, just to achieve something politically, but it's it hurt people a lot. It hurt people, but it seemed like it doesn't. A lot of the people don't count, such as women and children, are usually the easy vulnerable individuals, mm-hmm. and which is in my case, I was vulnerable early on, and it was just not something I would support. I appreciate peace. Mm-hmm. I appreciate peace. Just. A person, a human being, live in peace. Like here, I work, go to home. It's so peaceful. And
no better advocate for peace than a boy that was dragged into war and has become an accomplished man and can turn around and say war is not the way to go about solving conflict. Paul, again, I want to thank you so much for coming here today and most of all for sharing this very, very personal testimony. And best of luck to you. You've accomplished so much. I hope you're very proud of everything that you've done. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Paul Dancourt, who's the author of Out of the Impossible, The Hope of the Lost Boys. Where can people get your book?
Amazon.
On Amazon. So thanks again. And to all of our listeners, thanks for joining us. We'll be back with you next week.
Thank you for listening to the World Affairs Report, brought to you by the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh in cooperation with KQV News Radio. The World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that has been bringing the world to Pittsburgh for over 80 years. To learn more about the council and upcoming events, please visit worldpittsburgh.org. Be with us again next week when we take a 30-minute look at issues of global importance.